This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 24th of January 2014. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 24th of January, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Maria Head.
Hello.
And Albie Minns.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: private school may test pupils for drugs, fears for services at Winchester's hospital, and villagers say no to massive power plant. So, Nikki, can we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was: private school may test pupils for drugs. Girl expelled from St Swithin's. An exclusive girls' school in Winchester is considering drug testing pupils after a stash of drugs was found. One girl was expelled and another suspended from St Swithin's, a private school in Alsford Road, following a police search. The girls, both from Year 10, are understood to be 14 years old, and there has been concern among parents after it emerged a number of pupils have been using drugs in the holidays. But Simon Mays, the school's development director, said a recent Sunday tabloid headline was wrong to imply a decision had already been made on testing. He said, "A small amount of cannabis was found on site in November. We know that it was not used on school premises, and the pupil responsible for bringing it onto the campus is no longer at the school. In accordance with our drugs policy, we do not tolerate the possession of drugs and will deal severely with any pupils found in possession. In addition, we continuously seek to deter pupils from using drugs through appropriate PSHE, which is personal, social, health and economic education. The school is also currently reviewing its policy to consider conducting drugs tests on pupils in cases where there is suspicion of use." He added, "To the best of my knowledge, this is the first time something like this has happened at the school." In a letter to parents, head teacher Jane Gandhi said, "During our investigation, we uncovered information about the use of cannabis and possible other drugs at weekends and during the holidays. The consumption of these drugs did not take place at school, but our duty of care to all pupils at St Swithin's means we will be raising our concerns with a small number of parents over the next few days. If the school goes ahead with regular testing, it will be only the second in the country to do so."
Fears for services at Winchester's hospital. Shake-up likely to see the Royal Hampshire County Hospital downgraded. The Royal Hampshire County Hospital looks almost certain to be downgraded, according to new proposals. Health bosses had been considering several options as part of an NHS shake-up that would see specialist, consultant-led hospitals, and Winchester had been considered as a potential site for a new super hospital. It has now been rejected on the basis of site difficulties. The report that will be considered by Hampshire County Council next Tuesday, January the 28th, has whittled the options down to two. Both could see A&E and maternity units in the city downgraded. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which runs the RHCH, and Basingstoke and Andover Hospitals, is arguing that a big expansion of Basingstoke's current hospital is a viable option, or that an entirely new site could also be appropriate. The latter could cost around £70 million and a patch of land between the A303, A34 and the M3 for ease of access has been mooted. A trust spokesman said on Wednesday it could not comment on what form the plans would take, and said various options would have to be considered following a consultation. Councillor Martin Todd sits on the county's Health and Overview Scrutiny Committee that will consider the report. He said, "I'm very concerned based on what I've read. Like everybody, I know the NHS can't stand still, but I do not yet see how the proposals are going to make things better. There are some tough questions that need to be asked, and not yet enough detail on what exactly is proposed. Both options in the paper talk about investing in Winchester, but also refer to removing critical care services to Basingstoke or a new Mid-Hampshire site. I also want to know what exactly this means for patients, which patients will be affected, and how will they be affected. I want particular reassurance as to what the care will be for women who start their labour in the midwife unit in Winchester, but then need extra medical intervention. Will this automatically mean being put into an ambulance and transferred to a new site? It is understood that regardless of where the centre is built, the services and facilities will be the same, around 300 beds treating 75,000 patients. As reported, Winchester could be left with a walk-in unit for less serious A&E cases and a midwife-led maternity unit for natural births only. Mary Edwards, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, said, "The public engagement shows us that most of the public recognise that it's safer and better to have hospitals that specialise."
Villagers say no to massive power plant. Hundreds of residents turned out for a meeting last Saturday over controversial plans for a massive power plant in their village. Around 150 people packed into Mitchell Dever Station's Warren Hall to discuss the pioneering proposal that would produce energy entirely from waste. But people slammed the proposals from Clean Power Properties and questioned the firm's motives. Nick Hurrell of Overton Road and a member of Mitchell Dever Action Group, MAG, said, "There's a combi trail of suspicion around this company. They're giving misleading information." Gordon Scraes, a retired financier who lives in the village, said, "A similar thing like this was set up in Peterborough. Then, as soon as they could, they sold it to a company in Indonesia. This is not about green energy or the environment." Land above the railway sidings at Mitchell Dever Station would be used for a plant that would bring together in one place autoclaves, pyrolysis and anaerobic digesters to convert waste into energy. Up to 210,000 tonnes of waste per year would be taken to the 6-acre site, in operation 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, producing 7.6 megawatts of electricity. The facility would also create up to 30 new jobs, developers say. Residents say 15,000 lorries, 150,000 tonnes of waste brought into the village, foul-smelling gases and noise pollution would be a blight on their lives. Harry Windham, Managing Director of Our Land Energy, which is managing the project on behalf of Clean Power, said, "The processes involved do not use or require hazardous chemicals, nor do they involve the combustion or incineration of waste. They take place within a fully sealed building that is operated under negative pressure, meaning that odour is fully controlled and does not escape. The planning application documents show that the plant will not create an adverse environmental impact." Chris Holloway, Director of Winchester Action on Climate Change, WIN-ACC, said she had only a short time to go through Clean Power's application, but had seen little to convince her of the benefits. "As far as we can see, they still haven't answered our questions," she said. "This is not a convincing project. Even though we support renewable energy in principle, it has not shown how it will contribute to a net reduction in carbon for Winchester." But County Councillor Jackie Porter said, "The proposal is in the wrong place. Waste isn't produced here. This plant should be placed in the conurbations where the most commercial food waste is produced." "There are waste management applications coming in all the time. We know that Chinham is up the road and takes on waste. It doesn't have this particular site. If planning consent is given, the plant could be open within 18 months of building work starting."
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. And now we continue with the death notices, Christian comment, letters to the editor, historical items, Chronicle comment, first person Alan Belgarum. And then we'll do the announcements and what's on. So we start with the death announcements. Alderman, Peter David Alderman, who died on the 3rd of January. Barney, Anne Barney, died on the 12th of January, aged 72. Cornelius Reed, Mary Cornelius Reed, died peacefully on the 14th of January. Edgington, Alan Leslie Edgington, died in hospital on the 11th of January, aged 89. Francis, Brian Francis, died peacefully in hospital on the 12th of January. Hewitt, Stephen Hewitt, died peacefully at home, aged 86. Hicks, David Richard Hicks, who was the former chef on the original Queen Mary and Queen Elizabeth, passed away in Martinique on the 12th of January. Long, Michael George Long, died at Countess Mountbatten Hospice, aged 78. Lowndes, Graham Lowndes, died suddenly at home in South Wanston, aged 70. Miller, Mary Alice Miller, known as Molly, died on the 17th of January, aged 95. Mitten, Heather Patricia Mitten, died suddenly at home after a long illness. Newman, Frederick John Newman, died peacefully on the 14th of January, aged 84. Newton, Pamela Newton, died on the 10th of January, aged 90. Sampson, Raymond Philip Sampson, died peacefully on the 14th of January. Somerbell, John Somerbell, a local physiotherapist, died peacefully, aged 51. White, Don White, died peacefully on the 11th of January. And White, Steve White, died peacefully at home, aged 72. Now move on to Christian comment, and that's going to be read by Albie.
Poverty porn or a ray of enlightenment? What side of Watching Benefit Street are you on? Is it an enlightenment as to how some of our population live and a warning to crack down on benefits? Or is it poverty porn, using other humans as our entertainment? In the Gospels, Jesus is never recorded as condemning atheists, or even trying to convert people from a different religion to that of his own. He isn't even hot on condemning the sexually immoral. What he does condemn is hypocrisy, and in the shorthand of the Gospels, that is seen in the Pharisees and Sadducees. They are judged because they judge. They look down on others because it made them feel better. Luke records, the Pharisee, standing by himself, was praying thus, God, I thank you that I am not like other people, thieves, rogues, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. Human nature has not changed, and though we are not such a religious culture as that in which Jesus lived, our media is constantly tempting us to judge. The scandals that are printed in the public interest are too often printed in the public titillation. They are there for us to feel how much better we are than those who have fallen. I am not calling for a veil of secrecy and believe in a free press, but I am questioning the motives of publishing many of the stories. Same is true for many of these reality programs. They are encouraging us to judge, and what I fear is that it comes without a warning, that the information is heavily edited and therefore biased. Those who live on Benefit Street are upset by the portrayal of their lives and suggest that those in work have been edited out. There are reports of their children being targeted at school. People are passing in their cars, shouting out their judgments on the families, and no doubt many more are doing so in the privacy of their own homes. It is a short distance from judging to condemning and blaming. This is what happened in Europe
especially in Germany in the middle of the 20th century, when the Jews were targeted as the reason for the economic and social problems of the time. We need the perspective of Jesus, who called on us not to judge, in case we are judged. In another famous incident, when a woman was caught in adultery, and they urged him to condemn her to death by stoning, the Taliban were not the first to insist on this, Jesus replied, "Let anyone among you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her." And that comment is by Terry E. Hemming.
Thank you. Now we're going to move on to letters to the editor, Nikki.
And from Andrew Beadle. Is City Council bending the rules? Sir, I'm sure most city residents, even if not against the Barton Farm development itself, certainly oppose the plan to divert the main Andover Road through it, resulting in traffic and pedestrians having to share the same space. Common sense would indicate that this will inevitably lead to conflict, with the risk of personal injury or worse. However, I understand the City Council maintains that the plan cannot be changed, as planning permission was given on that basis. Your January the 9th edition was headed Silver Hill Plan Set to be Revised. The article indicated that the council was working with the developer to make some necessary changes, for which a revised planning application would be submitted. Why is a planning revision acceptable for Silver Hill, but not where road safety is at risk? Andrew Beadle, Milesdown Place, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
And this is a letter from Karen Barrett. Sir, my quote, "How many more millionaires does Winchester want?" in the report on the Wolverstone development, which appeared in the Chronicle on January the 16th, demonstrated my frustration with a system that allows prime sites to be developed for the likely benefit of rich individuals and private landlords, rather than for people in desperate need of homes. In the 60 seconds allotted for my contribution to the Planning Committee's debate on Drew Smith's application to build large luxury houses on the Wolverstone site in Berwick Road, I highlighted the fact that WCC is currently looking for a site for the extra care scheme for the elderly. Wolverstone is a perfect site for non-car owners, walkable to most facilities, but also close to bus services, to the station and city centre, and to weak shops, surgery, pharmacy, post office, etc. As it is, the approved scheme will accommodate more cars than the former sheltered complex, but Drew Smith will not have to make any contribution to traffic mitigation projects, and loopholes in the planning system mean the company will not contribute to affordable housing either. During my time on WCC and the Planning Committee, I came to the conclusion that leaving delivery of housing to the private sector does not work. Commercial developers naturally want to make a profit and will find ways to avoid making any significant contribution to social housing or services. The Growth and Infrastructure Act 2013 has simply added to the bias in their favour by allowing retrospective scrapping of affordable housing planning conditions on viability grounds. Until there is a fundamental change enabling local authorities to acquire land and build houses for rent on a scale that addresses the dire housing shortage, waiting lists will continue to grow, and cities like Winchester, with inflated property prices driving up private rents, will offer no hope of residency to our young people or low-paid workers providing the city's essential services. Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
Now a letter from Janet Harrell of Hampshire Gardens Trust, under the heading Garden Trust's Supporting Role. Sir, I read Richard Pott's recent letter recording his concern about a neglected public garden area next to Winchester Police Station. Hampshire Gardens Trust is very interested in both helping to maintain such existing urban green spaces, however small, as well as creating new ones. A similar space is the Triangle at the bottom of Station Hill, which from time to time is tended by unknown volunteers when colourful displays appear. Another is Home Nursery Green, behind Hillier Nursery, containing a few of the original trees from when it was part of the larger commercial venue, No. 1 Nursery, in the early 20th century. The Trust is interested in supporting these small gardens, which add interest and unexpected pleasure to the urban scene, with small grants and or expertise in design and planting. We would welcome approaches from interested parties or anyone with a suggestion for creating a new urban or village green space.
And from Peter Mitchell. Is the council aware of internet's power? Sir, I was surprised to find that the Silver Hill scheme is intended to have 30 shops. It seems odd the city council is unaware of the internet, which reduces the demand for offices and shops. These 30 shops may eventually be let, to the detriment of the High Street and Brooks Centre. The Brooks has always been a white elephant. I recall when it was built, it was held up for months for an archaeological dig, which found a horse skeleton. It was suggested the money would have been better spent on a live horse of the Derby. The council recently turned down a proposed M&S store in Winnall, not on planning grounds, but because they wanted to force it into Silver Hill. Planning should be separate from the commercial interests of the council. It would serve the council right if M&S didn't agree to a stop in the centre. You can't blame them for being annoyed with a fruit stall outside their door. No doubt they would be entitled to a reduction in rates that would negate any profit from the stall. The council would not suffer if it causes many shops to close. It gets full rates whether the shops are open or closed. Any new premises will add to the £1 million it takes in commercial rates each week. When rents were rising, properties were revalued every 5 years. This should have happened in 2013, but because rents have been falling, it has been delayed until 2015. Rates are based on rentable value. It is time that someone with commercial sense is employed to advise councillors. It would be an interesting exercise if councillors' allowances were increased by 5%, but then reduced by the percentage of empty commercial properties in Winchester. They would then perhaps be interested in the result of their actions. Peter Mitchell, Drove Lane, Alsford.
This letter is from Patrick Gerrits and concerns how the UK lost lead in wind energy. Sir, Gary Butcher is correct to state the UK needs reliable energy sources to keep lights on and for economic growth and employment. What a shame that the UK lost its lead in wind energy technology development and manufacture in the 1990s. Lack of a home market was a significant reason anti-wind campaigners being effective at blocking many early projects, coupled with meagre government support to the industry. Meanwhile, Denmark, Germany and Spain all developed a thriving market, supplied by indigenous equipment manufacturers. Between them and a few others, these countries now export some 90% of project value to the UK booming offshore wind industry. Can Mr. Butcher explain what he and or his fellow energy economists were thinking when they made such short-sighted decisions, which led to this loss of growth potential and employment opportunity? Regarding wind turbines, average load factor in the UK is more like 25%, and accurate weather and immediate future production predictions can be made to ensure grid balancing and reliable supplies. The wind turbines proposed at Bullington Cross and Woodmancote will be grid connected and will not have diesel generator standby. All of this information is available, and it is odd an energy economist has not bothered to check such facts before writing his letters. He is right. He is in Teletubby land, but I am happy to help him out of it if he cares to contact me. Patrick Gerrits, Milnthorpe End, Sleepers Hill, Winchester.
And now a letter under the heading Little Support for Cities' Leisure Plans. Sir, you reported the outcome of Winchester City Council's Leisure Centre project consultation, Wooden Spoon for Leisure Plan, Chronicle, January the 2nd. There's little support for their proposals. Their preference for building at North Walls has been rejected, most favoured Bar End. The consultation also revealed strong support for high-spec facilities, especially a 50-metre flexible pool. Despite none of the council's options, including such facilities. This is hardly surprising. Almost 3,500 people have signed the public petition for a new sports and leisure centre incorporating such facilities to help increase participation and develop local talent as a fitting Olympic and Paralympic legacy. This legacy hangs in the balance, but is not yet dead. If the council engages effectively with sports clubs and other community groups alongside institutions such as the University of Winchester and Hampshire County Council, resources can be pooled. We can deliver the sports and leisure facilities the city needs and deserves, now and for the future. Winchester City Council needs to listen to and work with local people with sports expertise. They know what's needed. They understand the potential to expand sport and recreation across city and district. They bring skills and knowledge, can help raise capital, and they'll bring business to a new centre once it's open. It's time for us to work together. Emma Back, Fit for the Future, Winchester.
Thank you. Thank you. That concludes the letters. Before we go on to historical items, a reminder that if you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO 23 8AL. And now, Nikki, we're going to step back 100 years for the historical items.
1914, January 24, ice skating at Winnell Moors. After the succession of frosts all the week, that of yesterday morning, which was much more severe, provided a fine sheet of ice at Winnell Moors, and the scene there throughout the day was a very animated one. The Skating Association did not open the private part of the ice, so that, especially after the heavy frost of this morning, it should be in excellent condition today. Skating was resumed in earnest this morning, the sheet of ice being one of the largest ever provided at Winnell. And the second item, Winchester County Bench, no rear attendant. Charles Rogers, a locomotive driver, did not appear in answer to a charge of driving an engine with wagons attached on the highway between Twyford and Upham without having a man in charge of the rear wagon on December the 12th. Dr. R.A. Lister, county medical officer, stated that on the day in question he was motoring along the road between Twyford and Upham and overtook a traction engine with two wagons attached. The road was entirely obstructed and he was unable to pass. There was no man walking in the rear or riding in the rear wagon.
Both these items concern education. January the 24th, 1964. 1.75 million increase in education bill. After an hour's debate, the bill Hampshire ratepayers will probably have to face for education leapt up by more than 1.75 million on Thursday. The County Council Education Committee approved, without dissent, an £18 million budget for 1964-65, representing a 13% increase on the original estimate for the current year, and leaving rate-borne expenditure estimated at £15,588,330. These and other estimates approved by county authorities in recent weeks will come before the County Council for approval on February the 24th, when the overall rates prospect for the county will be known. And the other article, to secure an examination certificate must not be the sole purpose of education, Mr. C. Arend, headmaster of Winchester County Secondary Boys' School, told pupils, parents and school governors at the annual speech day on Thursday. The Newsom report would have the earliest and greatest effect on a school such as theirs, and the implementation of the report would be vital to the interests of half their children. With the institution of the new Certificate of Education in the present year, he said, certain dangers could be foreseen. They must be vigilant in case people began to think that the sole purpose of education was to obtain a piece of paper.
And now two items from the files 25 years ago, January 27th, 1989. And the first, under the heading Smoking Banned on County Buses. It will be lights out for smokers using many of the public bus services in Hampshire from Sunday onwards. From that day, smoking will be banned from the decks of Hampshire buses fleet. At the same time, Hampshire County Council's Planning and Transportation Committee this week gave the nod to a ban on all its subsidised services. Explaining the reasons for the ban, Managing Director Brian Cox said, Hampshire Bus is keen to make sure passengers have as comfortable a journey as possible, and one way of helping towards this is to stop smoking on the vehicles. And the second item, letter, Sir, it was interesting to read the attempted justification of one of Winchester Council's most disgraceful acts, the sadly inadequate archaeological investigation of the Brooks. It was wrong in the first place of the council to promote an excavation 30 feet deep, and meant the complete destruction of all the archaeological layers on the site. By last August, only a third of the site had been investigated. It took the active intervention of the Director of the British Council for Archaeology, plus the express concern of local bodies, before the dig was reopened for another 6 weeks. In spite of this, nearly half the site remains to be properly explored, and a wealth of archaeological material will be destroyed without trace.
And that concludes the historical items. Now we're back to the present with editorial comment, Nikki.
Clarity needed on future healthcare. If the latest proposals being suggested by health bosses to centralise major services on one site in Basingstoke are implemented, then the long-held fear that the RHCH could be downgraded may come true. Trust bosses have been considering several options as part of an NHS shake-up that would see specialist consultant-led hospitals. Until recently, Winchester was being considered as a potential site for a new super hospital. It has now been rejected on the basis of site difficulties. Where does that leave RHCH? A report to be considered by Hampshire County Council next Tuesday, January the 28th, has whittled the options down to two. Both could see A&E and maternity units in the city downgraded. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust is arguing that a big expansion of Basingstoke's current hospital is a viable option, or that an entirely new site could also be appropriate. While most people recognise that it's safer and better to have hospitals that specialise, the question remains, what sort of hospital will the people of Winchester and surrounding areas be left with? The Trust must make that clear, and the sooner the better.
Thank you. Now we move on to first person. Maria.
Abdication never an option for our Tyler's sovereign, and this article is written by Ronald Allison. No, she won't, I said very firmly to my friend last week. The Queen will not abdicate. Thinking back, I must have said much the same thing at least half a dozen times every week during my years in the Buckingham Palace press office. Usually, it was in answer to someone who thought the Queen was actually doing a terrific job and didn't want her to stop. It was very rare indeed for anyone to ask, as it were, hopefully. Abdication was never a possibility. The Queen had taken her coronation vows in 1953, determined to fulfil them, and that is exactly what she has done, and moreover will continue to do so. What she will also do, as she approaches her 88th birthday in April, Prince Philip, by the way, is 92, is reduce the number of her engagements each year. One Sunday newspaper last weekend headlined Job Share Between the Queen and the Prince of Wales. Now, that is not a palace term, nor is it accurate. The job is the monarch's alone and can only be so. However, the duties that go with it, though not all of them can be shared with others, They have been in recent years and will be increasingly in the future. It is not as though there are not enough family members ready, willing, and more than able to lend a hand. Children, grandchildren, and waiting in the wings, great-grandchildren are all available. The Prince of Wales will move more obviously centre stage, having stood in for his mother in the last Commonwealth Heads of Government conference and attended the funeral of Nelson Mandela. He will accompany the Queen when she visits France in June for the 70th anniversary of the D-Day landings. There they will be joining the Presidents of France and the United States, though sadly now, not many of the veterans who themselves took part in the invasion. That will not necessarily be the last overseas visit the Queen will make, but certainly the days of long-haul flights and month-long tours are of the past. Others, like the Prince of Wales and the Duchess of Cornwall in Canada, and the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge in New Zealand and Australia, will carry out the duties abroad later in the year. It is not necessary to list all the others who will have parts to play, though it is worth noting that both the Duke of Cambridge and Prince Harry have now left full-time military life, and of course the recently born daughter of Zara Phillips, aka Mrs. Mike Tyndall, is now 16th in the line of succession. So the monarchy continues to develop and adapt to changing circumstances. The Queen has now reigned for longer than most people in the United Kingdom have been alive. As we pray every time we sing the national anthem, long may she continue to do so.
Thank you. Now we've got some short snippets from Belgarum, Albi.
Yes, Belgarum, with his alternative look at the news. First one of three. There's nothing new about it. There are lots of current issues in Alresford, where to put some 400 houses over the next 20 years, heavy lorries on Broad Street, and the disputes at Alresford Town Council. So Belgarum just thought he'd throw another one into the mix. Why does the town cling to its formal title of New Alresford? No one calls it that, and has not done for decades. The late John Arlott, and a long-time resident, wrote so back in the 60s or 70s. The History of Alresford was written by A.J. Robertson and first published in 1937. Other towns like New Milton and New Malden are still widely known by their full name. Yet the Town Trust and the Town Council retain the useless and confusing new. Surely time to ditch the useless word. And while Belgarum is sounding off, why is Alresford pronounced Alresford? And now under the heading, Who'd Believe a Hip Joint in Winchester? Could there be a row brewing over the fate of the bone of King Alfred? It is being widely assumed the piece of hip bone found at Hyde Abbey in the dig in 1999 is that of the great king, or his son Edward. It's certainly Anglo-Saxon, but without a direct descendant, no one can say for sure. Now Dr. Dominic Selwood, in the Daily Telegraph, is suggesting that as Alfred was a Roman Catholic and a national figure, there should be a state funeral in Westminster Cathedral. It's hard to know whether Dr. Selwood has his tongue firmly in his cheek. Winchester would certainly have something to say, especially as Wessex kings were traditionally buried here. This mirrors the spat over where the skeleton of Richard III, discovered under a Leicester car park, should be interred. There's a tug of war between Leicester and York, where Richard was Duke. With Richard, researchers were able to find a living relative for DNA analysis. It's harder for Alfred. His granddaughter, Queen Edith, is buried at Magdeburg Cathedral in Germany. But the bones are not well enough preserved for DNA research. If they can't prove the bone is Alfred's, what's to be done with it? And the third item, you couldn't make it up. This year, the City Council has dropped the annual posting of the timetables for rubbish and recycling collection to local households. The reason was to save money. The printed schedules were very useful to thousands of residents, helping them to remember to put out the green bins 1 week, black bin the next. But for 2014, residents have been told to download the information from the council website. Yet its overview and scrutiny committee, sitting on Monday, heard from Chairman Chris Pines that half of the households in the district had no access to computers. Councillor Kelsey Lerney said in some areas the figure was 90%. At the time, the committee was discussing social exclusion. The irony of the leaflet decision needs no elaboration.
Thank you. Now we move on to this week's announcements with What's On. There's a couple of concerts, both on Saturday the 8th of February. There's a Quiristers concert in St Paul's Church at Week at 7 p.m. Featuring Bach, Handel, Britten and Vaughan Williams. Entry for that is £10. For more information, telephone 01962 840440. That's 01962 840440. And also on Saturday the 8th of February at 7:30 p.m. there's a concert in aid of the Winchester Mayor's Charities. This is in St John's Church at Alsford, and it features Diana Beckett and the Military Wives Choir from Salisbury Plain. The cost for that is £15, and that includes a reception after the concert. You need to telephone the tourist office for tickets, and that's on 01962 840500. That's 01962 840500 for tickets for the Military Wives Choir. Now, lighting up time ends on Friday the 24th of January at 7:53 a.m. and begins at 4:42 p.m. Next Wednesday, the 29th of January, it ends at 7:47 a.m. and begins at 4:51 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870370. That's Irene on 01962 870370. And now we continue with items of general news, Nikki.
And EU levy will force me out of business. It has been a linchpin of the rural economy around Winchester for centuries. But now Itchinstoke watercress farmer John Marshall, 35, says he's being forced out of business by a new government levy. He said, "At stake is the very future of traditional watercress farming." In quotes, "Only three of us do it traditionally around here, and it's going to kill the trade," he said. "If we do not carry on, you won't see bunch watercress anymore. It will just be all from massive farms. I feel like I'm being squeezed out of business. Big farms can afford this. I can't. It's a travesty." An EU directive means Mr. Marshall is looking at costs of around £1,500 to make the farm at Itchinstoke compliant, including creating a settlement pond for filtering water before it's discharged into the river. He will also need to pay almost £900 to apply for a licence and an annual fee for a permit to discharge the water of £620. With an annual turnover of around £15,000, he thinks he could be out of business by spring. "I have to get it done by May. If I carry on as I am, they will fine me, which I can't risk, so what can I do?" he said. Environmentalists have recently expressed concern at the state of Winchester's rivers as a result of fertilisers contained in agricultural runoff, which contribute to elevated phosphate, which is damaging the chalk streams. Mr. Marshall of Jesty Road, Alsford, who works on the farm with his wife Amanda, 40, is also a full-time firefighter. He rents the farm from Charles Ranald. Mr. Ranald of Itchinstoke said, "We feel most strongly that the Environment Agency's demands are flawed in that the minuscule amount of non-toxic silt pollutant that our watercress beds discharge into the river over a 2 or 3 day period once a year is as nothing in comparison with the permanent pollution caused by up to 50 wading cattle defecating directly into the river and a lesser but significant pollutant discharge by a resident population of approximately 5 swans. And there's a photograph of the family of Mr. Ranald and the worried watercress grower John Marshall with his wife Amanda and son Joshua looking over the lovely peaceful scene with the river at the Itchen.
Mystery, if town event will proceed. Proposals for a massive murder mystery event in Bishop's Waltham have been put on hold due to funding concerns. Run by the town team, which works to boost trade and raise the profile of Bishop's Waltham, the community event had been expected to take over the town centre on Saturday, May the 3rd. Set in the 1940s, it was hoped that murder in Bishop's Waltham would draw hundreds of residents into the game, and any money, after costs, would have gone to Bishop's Waltham Care Group. But Councillor Terry Wilson expressed concern over funding. Under proposals, the parish's meeting rooms would be lent to the organisers on four occasions, and use of the Jubilee Hall would be free on the day of the event. But Councillor Wilson said, 18 months ago, we stopped providing rooms for free because demand was growing too much. The only rooms that are given for free are council events. This is not a council event. If they want to, they, the town team, can hire the rooms and apply for a grant by presenting accounts, but we haven't seen any yet. I think we have given enough to business. I do not see why we should give any money to this. Councillors voted overwhelmingly to defer approval of the plans pending further clarification of funding.
And now an article, "We're just strumming along," say players. It might be 200 years old, but residents in Soberton have proved the ukulele's appeal is timeless. The county's newest pub, the county's newest club, the Soberton Strummers, held its inaugural meeting at the White Lion Pub. Organiser Beverly Lambert says the ukulele is enjoying a revival, and since moving to this area, she has been keen to ride that wave of popularity. There are clubs in Southampton and Portsmouth, but I wanted something smaller, where a few people could get together and have a few drinks and play, she said. The Strummers meet at the White Lion Pub in School Hill for 2 hours for fun, strumming and banter each week. For details, contact Beverly on 01489 878 569. That is 01489 878 569. And there's a wonderful photograph. Coloured photograph of 21 strummers, all with their ukuleles in the White Lion Pub, all looking very happy. And I'll have to get one of those myself.
And Pair Home In on final stretch of Atlantic Row. Charity challenge to raise £200,000. They are almost on the home stretch of a daring and exhausting marathon row across the Atlantic Ocean to raise £200,000 for charity. Winchester's Will North and his university friend Dan Howey are battling to reach Antigua to raise the cash for leukemia and lymphoma research, Cancer Research UK and St Anna's, a school and home for orphaned and abandoned children. So far, the pair, who are ranked fourth overall, have raised nearly £75,000 and are expected to arrive at the West Indies at the end of January. They will have rowed for more than 50 days from when they left La Gomera in the Canaries. The only thing that stands between the highest ranked pair now is to combat the remaining 700 miles, the same distance as John O'Groats to Land's End. Will's father, Simon, of Pearson Lane in Shawford, said, "It's just brilliant. Unfortunately, their desalinator isn't working and they've had problems with the rudder, which they're having to steer with their feet, but they're hoping for one last splurge to take them to the end. It's quite incredible what they've achieved. It seems just like yesterday that I waved them off." In his blog posted last week, Mr. Howey said, "This last week has seen some pretty hairy conditions, and we've been on high alert at the possibility of another capsize, We had to row nearly broadside onto the waves and wind to maintain our ground and not get pushed south. I dreaded my night shifts, as you couldn't see where the damn waves were coming from, and a capsize at 3 a.m. would not be funny. Still, we got through it and we made some really good ground on the cruise in front. Blue Steel has been flying, and we are so pleased to have such a brilliant little boat. Winchester-born Mr. Howie, 28, now a London-based headhunter, and his friend Dan, have endured 20-foot waves, sharks, and numerous technical issues, but the intense row has also seen them celebrate Christmas, New Year's Eve, and Dan's 29th birthday on board their boat. And we also have some pictures of them at sea rowing in their amazing boat. I can't think how they did this. It has lots of sponsorships around the side of it and a picture of Will North in a baseball cap beaming out. And good luck to them. I think an amazing effort.
Cooperative comes good for riding charity. An Arlesford store drafted in some serious muscle to help launch its fundraising campaign. Last Saturday, Muttley and George, two ponies from a charity that organises riding for the disabled, were in town to raise awareness of their work and set the campaign in motion. Broadlands Group, based in Medstead, provides therapeutic riding for those with learning and mental disabilities. Its Chairman of Trustees, Nigel Hoppett, was joined for the event by Chairman of Arlesford Town Council, Lisa Griffith, and the co-op retail business manager, David Fulton. Broadlands will be the sole recipient of this year's community support card campaign, receiving up to £15,000. Under the scheme, customers have their cards swiped when they shop, and the more the card is swiped, the quicker the funds are donated. Mr. Hoppett said, "Being selected to be the recipients of their scheme was a lovely start to the year for the trustees and all involved at the stables. As a charity raising money to care for the ponies, this is a welcome relief from the pressure of fundraising and a boost for all those helping the riders and looking after the ponies." David Fulton said, "This charity, which is run by such dedicated volunteers, makes an amazing difference to the lives of the people it helps. So it was an easy decision for our bid panel that they be our 2014 CSC recipients." Broadlands Group RDA will also hold an open day in the summer with the co-op support. Last year, the CSC in Arlesford donated £10,000 to Busy Bees Preschool in Bishop Sutton and £5,000 to Arlesford Rugby Football Club Minis. Last year, more than £180,000 was donated to good causes across the south. And there's a lovely photo with the two horses, Muttley and George, standing in front of the cooperative with Nigel Hoppett, Shelley Gould, Lisa Griffiths, David Fulton, Kit Heyer, and Winchester MP Steve Bryan.
Now an article about woodcocks. Bird study gets vital funding. Volunteers examining the behaviour of rare woodcocks in the New Forest have been awarded over £12,000 to undertake cutting-edge research. The New Forest Woodcock Group will use night vision equipment and radio tag transmitters to observe never-before-seen nighttime mating behaviour and potentially track the movements of female with young. The volunteers aim to increase understanding of this enigmatic bird and explore the reasons behind its national decline. The RSPB has given the woodcock amber status in its traffic light system of conservation importance, meaning the number of birds has moderately declined over the last 25 years. By understanding more about how woodcocks use the New Forest, the group hopes to discover if human pressures are affecting the species population. The study's grant was allocated by the New Forest National Park Authority's Sustainable Development Fund, SDF, at its December meeting. The SDF provides grants for projects that will help sustain the New Forest National Park and ensure a better quality of life for now and future generations to come. Dr. Manuel Hinge, New Forest Woodcock Group's research coordinator, said, This woodcock breeding study will be helped enormously by the SDF grant. The woodcock is a very secretive bird whose brilliant camouflage makes it extremely difficult for us to watch and follow through dense woodland, especially at night. The equipment purchased will allow us to follow three aspects of the woodcock's breeding behaviour and will give the group an insight into how the birds use the New Forest in spring and summer. Members will be able to watch the birds' courtship behaviour at night with special imaging kit, follow individual birds at a discrete distance using radio tracking, and digitally record their display calls. And there's a photograph of the woodcock, plump bird with a very long beak, resting up. And the photograph shows the woodcock's cryptic plumage and how it provides perfect camouflage in winter woods. It's very difficult to distinguish the bird against the background.
Health walks have a double benefit. Keeping those New Year's resolutions can be a bit tricky, but people in Winchester are getting active and taking in the local scenery all at once. Walking for Health started in the city in 2008 and is now enjoyed by over 80 people a week, with organised walks taking place from Monday to Friday. Designed for those suffering from a chronic health condition or currently inactive, the health walks last for 1 hour and cover 2.5 to 3 miles. Led by trained walkers, the routes change weekly and give a different view of the local area. Councillor Rob Humby said, "The Winchester health walks are a great way to improve your health whilst enjoying the beautiful surroundings of the city and also the rural areas of the district. There are 7 walks, all free, in Winchester, Stanmore, Sutton Scotney, Bishop's Waltham, Wick and Alsford."
Basics Bank marks its 10th birthday. Winchester Basics Bank has celebrated its 10th anniversary with a special service in the cathedral. The North Transept welcomed around 80 guests, including the Mayor and Mayoress of Winchester, Ernie and Barbara Jeffs, and MP Steve Brine. They joined trustees and staff of Winchester Basics Bank to mark 10 years since it opens its door to clients. It provides foodstuffs to people in need. Chairman of Trustees, Jean Hart, described Sunday's event as a bittersweet moment, as she thanked all those who have been involved over the years. "We are so grateful to the churches, schools, businesses, press and individuals who have supported us with donations of food, clothing, time and money." A cake was cut by manager Francis Rogers and long-serving volunteer Renee Bao before the group joined a packed cathedral for the annual Unity service, where Mr. Brine read a lesson.
City Tories defect to Lib Dems. Winchester City Council has been thrown into turmoil by the defection of 2 Conservatives to the opposition. Councillors Jamie Scott and Derek Green, who represent the Stanmore area, have both joined the Liberal Democrats. The move means that both main parties now have 27 seats, with 2 for Labour and 1 independent. Councillor Keith Wood, council leader, told the Chronicle, "I'm disappointed. I'm not sure why they've gone. I know Councillor Scott was unhappy for some time because he wanted to seek promotion within the Conservative group." Councillor Wood said he intended to carry on as leader. Councillor Derek Green said, "We've resigned because we are not happy. I would rather not go into it at the moment." Councillor Scott said, "We both remain fully committed to the residents of St Luke and will continue to deal with issues and concerns as they arise, just as before."
Town must find space for 500 new homes. Residents to be consulted on future development. Bishop's Waltham has to accept hundreds of new houses as part of Winchester City Council's development plan, but that doesn't mean locals can't influence where they go. A parish council meeting last Tuesday heard that the Bishop's Waltham development plan continues to gather pace and now, following unanimous approval from councillors, proposed sites for development will go out to public consultation. Over the next 20 years, the town will have to find space for 500 new homes, as well as the accompanying infrastructure and employment opportunities. A year ago, 40 residents, led by Councillor Robert Shields, began gathering information on housing requirements and suitable locations, which will be sent to Winchester City Council as they draw up its development plan. Last year, the group agreed on a vision. All new developments should be situated as close as possible to the town centre or existing developments in order to maintain the social ambience and vitality of Bishop's Waltham, a medieval market town with natural boundaries surrounded by farmed land. Four main sites for development have been identified: Coppice Hill, which would take 80 homes, Martin Street, and part of Priory Park, which would take another 80, while the vineyard and land near Tangier Lane would take around 100 homes. Albany Farm would accommodate another 100 or so dwellings. Councillor Shields, who heads the Parish Council's Development Plan Steering Group, said, "Let's be clear about this. This is our plan, and Winchester City Council agreed to it. The consultation would run from January the 24th to March the 7th and will include public exhibitions, presentations to community groups and online access to development plan documents." And there's a photograph of what obviously is a large, I should think, village hall with several big tables and a lot of people poring over the plans and maps of their area to help make the decision of where they're going to go.
Westminster Wows Week Pupils. A group of Winchester primary school children visited the House of Commons recently. Winchester MP Steve Brine invited teachers and pupils from Week Primary School's newspaper club to visit Parliament on January the 8th. The group took a tour of the house and a chance to quiz the MP about his job. Mr. Brine said afterwards, "I really enjoyed having the group here, and what a super bunch of kids they are. I read the Week Whiz magazine they publish, and it is a wonderful piece of work." Charlotte Prince Rayner said, "Being where our country's decisions are made, watching the House of Commons in action, and meeting our MP was something I'll never forget." And the photo is very colourful and includes 15 beaming children and there's some members of staff and Steve Brine in the House of Commons.
Young cooks inspired to get creative. Budding young chefs got inspired to get creative at the launch of a school's cookery competition at King's School. The regional Create and Cook competition encourages youngsters aged between 12 and 14 to devise a two-course menu using as many local ingredients as possible. Min Raisman of Fit to Cook Food Education organised the workshop at the Winchester School. She said, "I'm really encouraged by the level of interest being shown in the competition by Hampshire's young cooks and anticipate the standard of entries will be higher than ever." The workshop included a demonstration of a local dish and executive chef Andy McKenzie of Leinston House Hotel Sparsholt assisted previous finalist Callum Moosley in creating it. Mr. McKenzie said, "With so much fantastic Hampshire produce around, the young cooks are spoilt for choice. By entering the Create and Cook competition, we hope that young cooks will explore their local farmers' markets, farm shops, gardens and allotments to search out their local flavours. Young cooks can enter the competition through their school's food technology departments. The top Hampshire cooks will go to a final in May at Highbury College, and the winners will go on to cook against competitors from Sussex and the Isle of Wight in June. Winners of the competition win their school's food technology department £1,000, plus get their recipes professionally styled and photographed." And this article is accompanied by a photograph of Andy McKenzie, the executive chef at Leinston House, together with the previous finalist, Callum Moosley. And Callum is showing off the dish which he's prepared. Beautiful, beautiful mouth-watering dish of food there. And they're surrounded by pupils from King's School.
Befriending group seeks volunteers. Volunteers are being called upon to help Winchester children who need support. Friends of the Family, are urgently seeking 10 new helpers as part of their 5-13s project, who can support young children when they are at their most vulnerable age and their families. The charity is looking for friendly, caring individuals who can listen to others and offer 2 hours a week after school. Successful volunteers are given training before being carefully matched to the needs of a family. Project leader Samantha Hunt said, "Volunteers are expected to offer the children and their families respect, practical help, and sustained emotional support, encouraging them to find their own strengths and build their confidence. In return, Friends of the Family offers training and support, reimbursement of travel expenses, and the chance to make a real difference to a family's life. This unique program is a voluntary befriending service for families with children aged 5 to 13 years, offering long-term, non-judgmental support in the family's own home. For more information, call Ms. Hunt on 01962 864 466. That's 864 466.
Share great war memories before it's too late. If we don't record it now, their stories will be lost forever. That was the message behind a special World War I event at Winchester's Discovery Centre last Saturday. Your Time to Share is encouraging residents to come forward with anything that helps them tell the story of Hampshire's unique involvement in the Great War from 1914 to 1918. Organisers say that could be anything from medals and photographs to postcards and household items. Memorabilia presented will be considered for use in Soldier's Journey, an exhibition illustrating the county's contribution to the Great War. A steady stream of people passed through the centre during the afternoon, with a total of 25 different sets of items presented. Robin Isles of Winchester City Museums said the initiative is crucial. People's grandparents and great-grandparents will have personal memories of these stories. But some of those stories are going to be lost if we don't record them now. In that way, we can begin to answer the questions that those of the modern generation might have about what happened. Telling the story through a history book can make it feel quite distant, boring even. But when we can tell a story of someone in their town, from Winchester, perhaps, of their own age, it makes it real to them. Soldier's Journey is a joint effort between Winchester City Council, Southampton City Council and Hampshire County Council, and is supported by the Arts Council England. It will be at a variety of locations, including the Discovery Centre, throughout the county from October the 11th until January the 11th next year. And there's a photograph with this article of Linda Emery looking through the artefacts with Robin Isles and Patrick Craze of Winchester City Museum.
Bluffers win the day. The first meeting of 2014 for Winchester Winemakers Circle was based on Call My Bluff. Members were presented with three bottles to taste, and a panel of the ladies Jan Murray, Pat Wheeldon and Eileen Cox tried to convince the floor that the wine they were describing was the one being tasted. They were very convincing, as only a handful of members correctly guessed the Colombard, Chardonnay and the Merlot. Much more success was achieved in recognising the Cabernet Sauvignon Shiraz. The President's Trophy for number of points scored in 2013 went to Adrian Dodds, and his mother, Barbara, won the evening's competition with her orange wine.
Lambs are leaping this weekend. They're the newest arrivals at a Winchester College, and they're set to be the centre of attention this weekend. Staff at Sparsholt College will be throwing open their doors as this year's lambing season gets underway. Visitors will be able to see the newest offspring as well as enjoy farming-based puzzles and quizzes, craft activities, afternoon milking, ponies for petting, tractor and trailer rides and more. Tickets cost £5 for adults, £3.50 for children aged 3 to 16 and £15 for a family ticket, all available at the gates, which open at 9:30 a.m. and close at 3:30 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. Dogs are not permitted. And there's a lovely photograph of beaming agricultural student Ryan Leyland with two of the first lambs to be born this year, always enchanting. And on another note, a new baby, Anteater named, an anteater pup born at Winchester's Marwell Wildlife, its first, has been named with a little help from the public. Visitors were asked to vote for their favourite name by keepers, who offered free tickets for one lucky winner, with the winning name Rojo receiving more than 50% of the 1,100 votes. The keepers deliberately chose unisex names as they would not be able to tell the animal's sex for several months. Giant anteaters are native to South America and are listed as vulnerable in the wild, and sadly, there's no photograph to describe.
Welcome for Body-Worn Video Cache. Hampshire's Chief Constable has welcomed funding from the government for body-worn cameras. Hampshire Constabulary Chief Constable Andy Marsh said, "This funding keeps Hampshire and the Isle of Wight at the cutting edge of body-worn video technology, not just in Britain, but also anywhere in the world. As well as being very welcome news, this commitment by government is recognition of the massive benefit body-worn video offers in terms of building trust with the public and having an accurate and verifiable digital record of the evidence. It is my intention, both as Chief Constable for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, and in my new national role, to work with those other forces who are leading the way to make body-worn video something that the public continues to support and is available to every uniformed police officer."
Concern as mystery toxin returns. It has killed at least 12 dogs and left two others seriously ill. Now, a mystery toxin that struck fear into the hearts of dog owners across the New Forest is thought to have poisoned another two pets. It comes a year after the first outbreak, sparking fears that the next few months will see another spate of deaths. But experts in Winchester are no nearer to identifying the toxin, which causes skin lesions and acute kidney failure in its victims. Most of the initial fatalities occurred at various locations across the forest between December 2012 and March 2013. The timing of the two new cases suggests that the cause could be seasonal in nature, but the poison's origin remains a mystery, despite extensive testing carried out by various organisations last year. Vets, alarmed at the possibility of a fresh outbreak, are urging dog owners in the forest to be vigilant. One of the practices involved in treating the poisoned pets and investigating their death is Winchester-based Anderson Moores. Commenting on the two new incidents, vet David Walker said, "The first dog developed skin lesions and went on to suffer kidney problems. It was hospitalised for more than a week but managed to pull through. The second animal became ill incredibly quickly and was in hospital for only 48 hours before it had to be put down. The dogs are understood to have been infected in the Sway and Wilverley areas of the forest." Mr. Walker added, "Some of the first cases were presented this time last year, and it's incredibly concerning that it might be starting again. A huge amount of testing was done in 2013, but failed to provide a conclusive answer. Our message to pet owners is to be vigilant and consult a vet immediately if their dog develops skin lesions. No other animal species appears to have been affected by the poison. Similar cases have been reported in Cornwall, County Durham, and Surrey."
Natalie resigns over bullying complaints. An Alsford town councillor has resigned, saying her position has been made impossible following bullying complaints against her. Natalie Carpenter had raised concerns about alleged fraud involving gaming machines at Alsford Recreation Centre, run by the town council. But she was accused of bullying town council staff, an allegation she denies. Mrs. Carpenter had raised concerns about cash handling to auditors, BDO, and it had called on the council to tighten its procedures at the ARC, Alsford Recreation Centre. As a result, the council has agreed to appoint Meridian Leisure Services as its new games machine supplier from March 1st. Mrs. Carpenter of Grange Road said, I have felt unhappy about certain things at the council, which came to light last April. It's public money and our duty to make sure everything is correct. Mrs. Carpenter said complaints were made about her bullying when she raised concerns over the machines at a meeting. They were not following up on anything, like an investigation. I feel I can't function as a councillor in case I'm accused of further bullying. She said she was sad to have been forced out. My family goes back hundreds of years in Alresford. I stood as a local councillor because this is my family town. I have been forced out of it by people who don't have the same feeling that I do about it. Mrs. Carpenter called for an independent investigation into the games machines. Town Council Chairman Lisa Griffith said, I do not think we have pushed her out. We always seem to be at odds. No allegation of bullying was ever made formally. There was a falling out. Things got heated at a meeting, and a member of staff was unhappy about the way she was spoken to. But Councillor Griffiths added, she was sorry to see Mrs. Carpenter go. It is a shame. She had strong principles and stood up for what she thought. She would not go with the flow. She would question things. It's a shame to have lost that. Mrs. Carpenter will remain a trustee of Alresford Town Trust. Its chairman, Robin Atkins, said, she's extremely hard-working and very useful, and we are glad she is carrying on with the Town Trust.
90-mile-per-hour chase ends in collision with bus. Driver apprehended in Twyford in stolen BMW. It was a reckless piece of driving that put countless lives at risk. Motorists were forced to swerve out of the way as a stolen BMW raced through the streets, dodging oncoming traffic and hurtling past others at breakneck speed. Pursued by police, driver James Poole put his foot down to shake them off, jumping red lights and speeding along the wrong side of the road. The 8-mile chase came to an end only when 20-year-old Poole crashed into a school bus which had stopped at traffic lights, having failed to squeeze between it and an oncoming lorry. The entire drama was captured on camera inside a police patrol car, Southampton Crown Court heard. Prosecutor Edward Phillips told how PC Mark Bailey was driving an unmarked police vehicle southbound on the M3 just north of Winchester when he spotted a grey BMW overtaking another car. Video footage played to the court showed Poole then returning to the outside lane before undercutting other vehicles. The officer then turned on his blue lights and sirens, but Poole ignored it and carried on, accelerating and reaching speeds of up to 90 miles per hour before careering off the motorway at Winchester and hurtling down the B3335 Twyford Road. In Twyford, he jumped the village traffic lights at 60 miles per hour, where police were forced to slow down. As they tried to catch up again, Poole continued overtaking other vehicles on the wrong side of the road, well in excess of the speed limit. He ignored keep left bollards and forced oncoming motorists to pull over to avoid a crash. The pursuit finally ended when Poole tried to squeeze between stationary cars and oncoming traffic at the lights at the Fisher's Pond Junction before crashing into the bus. His passengers ran off, but Poole was arrested, sitting in the driver's seat. Poole, 20, of no fixed abode, admitted driving the taken car driving dangerously, without insurance and a licence. He also admitted stealing another BMW on a separate occasion. Jailing him for 22 months and imposing a 3-year driving ban, recorder Nigel Lickley QC told Poole he had acted with complete disregard for the safety of other drivers and his passengers. And there is a photo, there's some video footage here, and one photo shows James Poole being arrested.
Road shut after two crashes. Icy conditions caused two rush hour crashes in Winchester on Monday morning. Poles Lane was closed soon after the first incident, which saw a car career into a ditch just before 8:45 a.m. An ambulance was called to the scene and a man was taken to Southampton General Hospital. Less than half an hour later, police attended a crash scene at 9:15 a.m. in the same road, which involved a Volvo and Mazda MX-5. The female Volvo driver suffered minor injuries.
Debbie aims to give kids some tasty new skills. A Winchester woman has set up cooking classes for children out of her own kitchen. Cookie Kids, based at Wood Green Road, Hairstock, offers cookery courses for children aged 6 to 11 and aims to teach essential nutritional and cooking skills. The business, which opened just before Christmas, has recently been awarded a £653 grant from Winchester City Council, which founder Debbie Plunton has put towards specially printed aprons and equipment. She said in recent years there has been more focus on healthier eating trends, but with busy family lifestyles, children are missing out on the key skills around cooking and food hygiene and preparation. The classes are also open to university students who want to learn the essentials of cooking. From sugar paste roses to pizza making classes, there are a range of workshops on offer for both after school and in the holidays. Councillor Rob Humby said, Debbie has been an assistant for 15 years, so is enthusiastic about teaching children valuable skills whilst incorporating nutritional values. It is good to see how a City Council grant has made a real difference to a business just starting out. Prices start at £12.50 per class if six are booked, and £15 if paid on the day. For more information or to book, call Debbie on 07711 658 016, 07711 658 016.
Hostel back in business after £1 million refurb. Homeless people in Winchester will not just be celebrating Christmas when they move into new quarters for the festive season. Milford House, Christchurch Road, has reopened after a big injection of funds for renovation works, which Housing Association officials said could not have come at a more important time. Rooms and facilities were refurbished after local housing association First Wessex invested over £1 million to help support the housing scheme. Charity Crisis has claimed homelessness has risen by 31% over the past year, and bed spaces in hostels for single homeless people, such as Milford House, have decreased by 10% over the past 3 years. Residents enjoyed a festive celebration, carols from the Southampton Philharmonic Choir, and handmade mince pies, and showed off their new digs when local partners came along for a sneak preview. Chief Executive of First Wessex, Peter Walters, said, "With the current housing shortage, there is a higher need for people to access schemes such as Milford House. First Wessex has run this essential scheme since 2000. The refurbishment has brought some much-needed improvements to the building, which we hope will enable us to continue to provide this essential service for many years to come."
Housing project is underway. Work is underway on an £8 million housing complex in Winchester. Last year, City Council has approved plans for 14 homes at the former Peugeot garage on St Cross Road, with former housing boss Councillor Ian Tate welcoming the development as a landmark building for the city. The Bargate Homes project is due for completion by summer 2015 and was funded in part by a loan from NatWest. Managing Director of Bargate Homes, Angus Cook, approached Ian Cook of NatWest for assistance with funding and agreed on a property development loan of £4.7 million. The 2,700 square metre site previously comprised several commercial premises, including a Peugeot garage and a furniture store. It also includes a former 19th century coach house, which will be converted into two family homes, while a new four-storey building will provide nine flats, alongside a newly built terrace of three four-bedroomed houses. Planning officers argued that demolition of commercial buildings in favour of new homes would clash with council policy, but in July, councillors voted the application through. Mr Cook said, "Ian at NatWest has been extremely supportive, and through what have been fairly horrific times for the property industry, the bank has continued to support us." Mr Cook, a relationship director at the bank, said, "Bargate has gone from strength to strength. and as well as building beautiful homes, the company has created local jobs and will make a significant contribution to the local economy. We're delighted to have supported this project.
Boost for Counselling Group. Free counselling services for young people have been boosted thanks to a £1,000 Cash for Causes grant. Winchester Youth Counselling supports vulnerable young people who have issues with their emotional and physical well-being. The service supports more than 100 youngsters aged between 11 and 25 each year in Winchester and also has two satellite services in Swanmore and Alsford. The money will help provide free counselling for four individuals. Cash for Causes is run by Winchester Round Table and supported by the Hampshire Chronicle from funds raised by the annual Winchester Bonfire Night. And there's a wonderful photograph of Jill Guppy, Winchester Youth Counselling Project Manager, David Platt, Treasurer, and Roger Backhouse, all beaming and holding a cheque that must be about 2'6" by 1'6" in size.
Young designers making waves with models. Talented young engineers are preparing to show off their skills at a major exhibition in London. There are just three junior members of Eastleigh District Model Boat Club, but they've already been making waves with their clever model boat designs. Their work, which includes radio-controlled vessels, is of such a high standard that they will be taking a selection of them to the prestigious London Model Engineering Exhibition at the Alexandra Palace. Two of the models that the children will be displaying include HMS Crane, which was built as part of a summer project last year, and a Thornycroft horse box from the 1920s. Patrick Hendra from the club said, "We would encourage any children who might like to find out more about what we do to come forward, meet our members and have fun." The club chairman can be contacted on 02380 77 5172. 02380 77 5172. And there is a picture included with this article of the children launching their boats, being watched by the adult members of the group.
Biology buff Beth, top achiever in A-levels. A Winchester student has won an award for achieving the highest mark in A-level biology. Beth Harvey, a student from Peter Simmons College, scored the highest mark of all the candidates who took WJEC's A-level examinations in 2013. She travelled to Cardiff to collect her award at a ceremony and was congratulated by WJEC's chief executive, Gareth Pearce, who said it was an outstanding achievement and evident of the hard work both Beth and her teachers had put in. Beth said she thought the course was well organised, with modules smoothly transitioning into one another. She added, "The course made me want to carry on studying biology and broadened my outlook. Since completing my A-levels, I've done some marine conservation volunteering in the summer, and I have just started a biology degree at the University of Sheffield." Beth hopes to work in conservation or the environment in the future. And there's a photograph of Beth collecting her award from Elizabeth Arthur, WJEC's Director of Qualifications.
More people in rent arrears, says CAB. The number of people in Winchester unable to pay their rent has rocketed, the Citizens Advice Bureau says. Social housing rent arrears reported to it from July to September last year increased by 70% compared with 2012. The charity believes changes to council tax support and the government spare room subsidy, the so-called bedroom tax, are the causes of the problem. Chief Executive of Winchester CAB, Jenny Meadows, said, "Tenants in social housing are often on low incomes or face acute challenges such as disability, and the impact on these people of rent arrears can be particularly damaging. Many households in Winchester District are facing hard times with the combined impact of high food costs, increases in rent and changes to support." Miss Meadows also expressed concern at the rising number of residents getting into difficulty with payday loans, such as Wonga. "Anyone that is struggling to make ends meet should come and see us for free debt advice rather than turning to costly alternatives such as payday loans," she said. City Councillor Chris Pine said, In terms of what's behind this, it's a matter of where do you start? Finding somewhere in Winchester where you can buy reasonable food cheaply is actually very hard. It's really difficult for working-class people to survive here. You add to that the way that, in my view, the benefit system is being made deliberately difficult to understand and to claim, it's not surprising the CAB are seeing numbers like this. Although economists have hailed the start of a recovery, the CAB said the number of people struggling to pay their rent has increased in every region across England. But Councillor Tony Coates, Winchester City Council's housing chief, took issue with the CAB figures. The last report I saw showed we were running at around 1% of our tenants in arrears, he said. Most of those were less than £500 in debt, and most of them were in debt before the Coalition's bedroom size criteria came in. Steve Brine, the Winchester and Chandlersford MP and principal private secretary at the Department of Work and Pensions, defended benefits changes. He said, "It's being fair to the taxpayer who must meet the huge cost of our benefit system and ultimately helping people escape the cycle of welfare dependency. The spare room subsidy is part of that, and I think it's absolutely right that we take action to help families, often with small children, living in overcrowded accommodation. While I understand data on these things sometimes comes from the national CAB organisations, this research seems out of kilter for council tenants living in city council housing stock, where rent arrears, eviction rates are virtually non-existent."
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Maria Head.
Bye.
And Albie Minns.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye. Do have an enjoyable week. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.